to the Wednesday show. It's hump day. Adam Azer, Scott White, and Chris Towers humping around. Bobby Brown style here, right?
I don't know that I like this intro.
No, come on. It's stay. Chris, stay or go.
I don't understand the reference.
Ain't nobody humping around. You never heard that song?
Bobby Brown? All right, well. I feel like the context is very different.
It is completely different, absolutely. Well, welcome to the Wednesday show. We'll grade some trades later on in the show, including some Mike Trout trades. Actually, let's grade a Mike Trout trade right now. Oh, I'm feeling crazy today. This is from Anthony. Give up Carlos Gonzalez and Jose Berríos. Get Mike Trout.
I think that's a win for the guy getting Gonzalez and Berríos.
I kind of felt the opposite. I think like it's a win for the guy getting Trout, but it does depend largely on circumstance. Like if the guy giving up Gonzalez and Berríos is 7-1 or 6-2, yeah, he can afford to take his lumps while Trout's out, and in the hopes that then he clearly has the best team when Trout returns.
So Chris would not give up Carlos Gonzalez and Berríos for Trout. What would you give up for Mike Trout?
This is the same thing as the Noah Syndergaard and Madison Bumgarner thing, where you're not just trading for a guy who's definitely going to come back and be himself. Like, you hope so, but if he has surgery on his thumb, like, that's the type of injury that can really derail a season, and that's my concern with Mike Trout. I'm not necessarily saying he's definitely going to struggle when he comes back, but it's absolutely in the cards.
I give him, like, a 90% chance. I mean, it's not a shoulder. Really, the shoulder's the only thing that
it's
would
worry me. It's the thing with
me.
Which you grip the bat, though, you know? Like, that's... We see a lot of guys
I don't struggle
coming back from, and that's the stability thumb, right? That's the thumb that you're holding on to at the end of your swing. That's your follow through.
I don't feel like we see it a lot with thumb injuries though, and we don't like Mike Trout's basically slump proof, right? How there was that one August 3 years ago where he hit like 200,
and he was injured when he did it.
He was, but he won't be injured theoretically when he comes back from that. I actually think I'm much more willing to pay for Trout in this situation. Again, if I was already had a nice lead built up, then I would Syndergaard. A, because I feel like it's a more predictable return, and B, because it's Mike Trout.
Let's have some more fun. Let's grade another Mike Trout trade while we're at it. This one is from Gmail. It's all it said was Gmail.
Okay.
Maybe it was pronounced Gamail. Maybe it's a person.
Gamail.
Gamail. Gamail Weeks. 14-team head-to-head categories league. Send Scott Schebler, Matt Kemp, Michael Pineda, get Mike Trout. Schebler, Kemp, and Pineda, get Trout. 14 teams.
That's going to be really hard. Like, you're kind of screwing your team over for 2 months.
It's a lot.
Like, you're giving up three must-start players in a 14-team league.
You could be giving up...
Kemp, who else?
Schebler and Pineda.
You could be giving up three sell-high candidates. I wanted to talk about Kemp because he had a good game yesterday, but I don't know if we ever talked about the impact that Freeman's loss could have.
But there's no question you're starting Matt Kemp.
Yeah.
And especially in a 14-team league. But I don't think there's any question you're starting Scott Schebler in a 14-team league.
I think Kemp was the only one you actually drafted as a starter. Schebler you basically got for free. He's bonus.
Oh yeah, you heard that right. We're gonna let the listeners enjoy that. I don't think
what,
so.
What did I do? What did
you
I do?
Meant to say starter for Matt Kemp, and you said something else that was just incredible. Have you ever seen the movie Along Came Polly?
I have no idea what I said.
I'm glad I wasn't the only one who caught that. but thank you for that.
Sure.
So, do you think you'd do this, Schebler, Kemp, and Pineda? For Trout?
Schebler, Kemp, and Pineda for Trout in a 14-team league.
That's a lot.
I mean, I don't know what the roster looks like. If Schebler was just a spare part for me, which is highly plausible.
Yeah. In a 10-team league, I think I'd do it.
Sure, because then
on circumstances.
There's a chance Pineda's not a starting caliber player in a 10-team league. Schebler might not be either. But in a 14-team league,
right.
And you said it was Roto, right?
Categories, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So, like, that you're looking at, you need 9 pitchers, you need 5 outfielders, you need a utility.
Mm-hmm.
That's potentially 2 months.
I think the bottom line is, like, Trout still holds value. He could be back right after the All-Star break. It might not be until start of August, but, you know, particularly if it's a league where playoffs don't begin particularly early for you, like, he'll still have time to make a monster contribution.
Now, they said 6 to 8 weeks. I probably should have at least considered the six part of it more. I've always been, you know, since yesterday, 2 months, 8 weeks. Could be 6 weeks. I mean, I'll take the over, but it's possible. All right, we got a lot to talk about from yesterday. Jose Quintana with another dud. Trevor Bauer making Masahiro Tanaka, well, putting his start in perspective, because Tanaka had 13 strikeouts against the A's on Friday. Bauer goes 14 against the A's yesterday. Denelson Lamet, Eric Skoglund, talk about those guys. But really a lot of hitters today. Brett Gardner went double dong. So did Matt Holliday. I think Zach Cozart did. We had one other player do it. But let's start with this. Is the following a must-add player? Eric Young Jr.?
No.
What if I need steals?
No.
He stole two in one
game. How available is Cameron Maben?
Yeah, exactly.
Not super available.
He was 45% owned yesterday.
Well, that's for a steals. Okay, for a guy that you're picking up only for steals, I wouldn't expect him to be more than 45% owned.
Yeah.
Because of all the head-to-head points leagues we have on CBS?
So to answer the question, he's definitely not a must-add player. But if you absolutely Correct. Need steals, he's a can-add player. I don't think there's any guarantee that he plays every day mm-hmm. over Ben Revere.
I'd still rather have DeShields than him. And DeShields is probably like 20% owned, right?
Shields hasn't been doing much.
Yep.
I don't expect Eric Young's going to do much.
All right, Eric Young did lead off yesterday, and Cameron Maben was out for the Angels. I am not going to spend that much more time talking about Young, but he and Ben Revere...
Just at the start of the show.
Yeah. Well, we did some Trout trades, though.
Okay. All right.
Here's a tweet. Tweet of the day is from Buster Olney of ESPN, and he is, in his tweet, citing Elias, the Elias Sports Bureau. If there are 47 home runs today, then May, the month of May, will set a record for the most home runs in any calendar month in baseball history. First of all, do you think there will be 47 home runs today? It's three per game.
That's a little higher than the league average. I think teams are averaging 62 home runs in 51 games, so you'd need everyone to play over their heads just a little bit. I want to know how many games we've got in Miller Park and Minute Maid. And
none.
I mean, when it's...
Are we playing in AT&T tonight?
There, no Coors. They're in
Seattle.
No, I don't
want to get there.
Yeah, I think the Brewers are on the road.
Taking
I'm honestly not sure. All right, but look, we spent a lot of time this offseason... talking about, was last year legit? How do we approach it? All those home runs. Looks like it's the same thing. And I saw a stat yesterday that we're on pace to for this season to have the most plate appearances finish in strikeouts or walks, which we set a record last year.
It's becoming a three true outcomes
yep.
league.
And yep. I think they said it's been a record like 4 years in a row or something. I think that was on the ESPN broadcast last night. But even if it's not, we know what the trend is. Strikeouts, walks, homers.
Yeah, the three true outcomes nature, something I wrote about a while back, how that's... And that's kind of why I think pitching has evolved the way it has, where you get this chasm between the pitchers who are able to throw strikes and miss bats and not give up home runs, versus the ones who suffer in one of those areas, if not multiple, and how it creates like some of the most dominant pitchers we've ever seen, and yet the majority of pitching around baseball is very vulnerable.
And this is also, I would say, this is a trend that is being exacerbated by the trend towards more shifts. And Joey Votto actually talked about this in a Fangraphs piece yesterday, where he says, he's part of the flyball revolution because of how much he's getting shifted.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't want to hit the ball on the ground to the right side ever.
You know, the first person I heard talk about that was actually Mark Teixeira, that one bounce back year he had before it all fell apart and he retired. 2 years ago, I guess it was, that recently. He talked about, you know, his stat line that year was like, as many home runs as singles or something, and it seemed completely unsustainable. And he was just like, look, the way they're shifting on us, you have to hit it over the shift.
Yeah.
That's the way to do it.
It's a different game. I look forward to an adjustment.
And as defenses...
fans don't really like it as much.
As defenses become more efficient, though, you're going to have offensive players need a way to overcome that.
I'm starting to come close to the point where I wouldn't hate a rule saying you can only have X amount of infielders.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, whoa,
I've been campaigning for that.
Crap out of me.
That's a bad rule. I love it.
I mean,
there's no analog in baseball for that rule.
I mean, look. Sometimes you have to make bad rules or look like bad rules for the sake of bettering the game.
It just seems like such.
How about you call the high strike?
Why would
that change the shift?
Like, because you're giving too much value to hitters, especially on those low pitches where hitters are able to hit those out of the park. Our perception of what a bad pitch is needs to be changing, because you see, I retweeted something yesterday that shows that basically success is all middle and low now. And part of that is hitters know that the high strike's not going to be called, so they just pass on it. And also, more hitters are finding it easier to hit for power on pitches low in the zone now.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of the whole uppercut swing. And so if you start calling that high strike, you're going to take a little bit away from the hitters and force them to adjust, maybe take away some of that power.
Interesting. Certain pitchers, look at Robbie Ray yesterday. They're taking advantage of how, and I guess the most famous example is Marco Estrada. They're taking advantage of how hitters have been conditioned to hit that low strike, and they're, you know, throwing these quote unquote rising fastballs that hitters are just flailing at. Because
the Dodgers, Rays, and Red Sox are all making that an organizational philosophy as well of throwing more high fastballs and getting away from sinkers.
Robbie Ray,
I mean,
he threw like a 95-mile-per-hour fastball to end the game last night.
And he got so many swings and misses on the fastball. And I watched on MLB.com, they have like, whenever somebody has a big strikeout game, they have, in Robbie's Ray's case, it was 10 strikeouts in 10 seconds. And you just, one right after another, they were swinging through a high fastball.
Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of fastballs.
He basically, he threw 76 of his 115 pitches for slider or for fastballs.
All right, so let's get into the action. And that'll be on the legitometer. We're putting Brett Gardner, Zach Kozar, actually three shortstops on the legitometer. Cody Bellinger, in case you haven't noticed, he's been a little cold lately. Yonder Alonso's been great. Robbie Ray, Luis Severino. So legitometer coming up later. Let's talk about Jose Quintana. And 10 hits, 7 runs, and 2 2/3 against the Red Sox. This followed a 4 1/3, 8-run outing at Arizona. Now, Quintana's only walked one batter over 3 starts, which was only 15 innings, but that's encouraging. Rick Renteria says the velocity's the same. It's not the stuff. It's the location for Jose Quintana. Do you guys feel that going forward, Jose Quintana will be a mid-3 ZRA guy? And you know, Jose Quintana.
To buy low, in other words?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I do. And right, there's not a lot of underlying factors that suggest regression has happened here. So I mostly buy the explanation the White Sox are giving, even though, you know, it's probably dumbed down a little for the masses. I think the bipolar, the way his Quintana season's unfolded in this bipolar way where, you know, several starts he looks like the Quintana we all know and love, and then there are these 7 earned run outings mixed in. I think that's even more reason to believe the true Quintana is still there. We just need to see it.
He's just not pitching well right now.
Right.
Yeah. All right, let me give you 3 names of pitchers who are, you know, anywhere from very available to somewhat available. Trevor Bauer, 7 innings, 3 runs, 14 strikeouts, and 19 walks, 73 strikeouts this year for Bauer. In 57, really? 73 strikeouts, 57 innings? Is that a
well,
typo?
Well, star helped a lot.
I know, but...
And the, 1.4 whip also helps in that regard?
And 3 quality starts, that's it, all season long.
I had not given Bauer... In fact, I thought maybe he should be the one to be removed for Clevinger before Salazar got his temporary removal. But now I think Bauer's pretty safe.
In the rotation.
In that role. Yeah.
Not as a fantasy option,
right,
necessarily.
But I don't know. I don't know what to make of this start. I can understand just picking him up in let's see where it goes kind of way, especially since pitching is such a need. But he did some interesting things in this start. Like, all 3 of the runs were in his first 4 innings, and then from that point forward, it's like he got angry because his average fastball velocity went up 2 miles per hour, and he threw like twice as many. He threw his curveball like twice as often in this start as he normally does. Got a lot of swings and misses on it. He basically went Lance McCullers on the Athletics. And it'll be interesting to see where it goes. But I think it's not like Bauer's never faked us out before.
Yeah, right? I think the key point there is on the Athletics.
Yeah, they strike out a lot. And they don't have a great lineup for sure. So the three pitchers I was going to give you were Bauer, 64% owned. Denelson Lamet with a nice start against the Cubs.
Yeah.
He's 42% owned, and Eric Skoglund, major league debut against the Tigers. He goes 6 1/3, 2 hits, no runs, 1 walk, 5 strikeouts. Eric Skoglund, 7% owned for the Royals. And after the game, Miguel Cabrera said, you know, he's so tall that he throws, you know, 90 miles per hour, looks like 93. I don't remember the exact quote.
Did you see
his height,
the nice moment between Cabrera and Skoglund?
No.
Cabrera steps in the batter's box for his first pitch. He kind of smiles at him and gives him a thumbs up.
Really?
Yeah.
He did that earlier in the year. I saw they gave like a hat tip to somebody who made it through a great pitch at him. He's just loving life.
Yeah, he's just like this late career gregarious Miguel Cabrera.
All right, so rank them. Bauer, Lamet, Skoglund.
In terms of how eager I am to roster them, I would go Lamet first, Bauer second, and Skoglund probably a distant third. Just because, I mean, in the minors, the strikeout rate was only so-so. The home run rate was not so great. Nice debut, but I need to see a lot more from Skoglund. Lamet, though, kind of reminded me of Michael Fulmer last year. He came up as with the reputation as a two-pitch pitcher, but then unfurls this changeup that puts him over the top.
And it doesn't have to be like an amazing changeup. We see this a lot with younger pitchers, where just if you have that third pitch just to keep hitters guessing, get you through the third time through the order, which we haven't necessarily seen from Lamet yet, but you know, the stuff is impressive. He got 17 swinging strikes again yesterday.
Doesn't Eric Skoglund, like, don't you feel like he should be pitching for the Twins
or the Minnesota Vikings?
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. Would you guys rather have Denelson Lamet or Brad Peacock? Chris.
Lamet.
Lamet. Scott?
I agree. Lamet.
Lamet or anybody on the Rockies, including John Gray.
I'd rather have John Gray.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
How about Tyler Anderson? How about Armando?
Oh, Tyler Anderson was a big letdown yesterday, wasn't he? It was at Colorado, but he's, you know, kind of the appeal for him was he's supposedly better at Colorado. There's still some interesting underlying numbers there for Anderson, the combination of whiff rate and weak contact, but the lack of consistency is, yeah, he's behind Lamet for me.
Joe Ross or Lamet?
Joe Ross.
I guess Ross for now, but that weird mid-game velocity issue for Ross is making it a close call.
Mike Foltynewicz or Skoglund? Like, would you drop somebody that you just sort of know who he is? Like,
yeah.
I'm looking at the most drop list.
Sure.
Patrick Corbin, Mike Foltynewicz.
Sure.
Yeah,
I don't think you're going to
get behind that.
You're not going to miss guys like that.
Right, right. And you may not even keep Skoglund, but let's
like
give it a shot.
How owned is Chris Tillman?
He's 54% owned.
That's another guy that I would be fine. Like, there's a lot of guys that are just guys.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. Okay, so any other big-time standouts for you? Or we can go to let's go to the big news, and then we'll get to the legitometer, actually. Okay, here we go. The big news, Bryce Harper suspended 4 games. I think I said over 3 yesterday. But
yeah.
I thought it would be more like 5. I'm telling you, it would have been probably 20 or so if he hit him with the helmet. Hunter Strickland, 6-game suspension. Both are appealing, the suspensions. James Paxton will start today against Colorado. Been getting a lot of questions. Start or sit at home. James Paxton against the Rockies.
I think you start him. I know we're usually a little iffy about pitchers coming off the DL, but I think you start him.
Nelson Cruz left with calf tightness, but he is expected to play today. Today I want to look at good players and look at the legitometer. Tomorrow, usually it's Worryometer Wednesday, but Memorial Day threw everything off. It'll be
today's Wednesday.
Yeah, it's Worryometer weird. Thursday, but there's got to be a better, like a TH word for Thursday. Anyway, Manny Machado, 0-5 with 4 strikeouts yesterday, 0-13 with 8 Ks in his last 3 games. So we'll talk Machado tomorrow.
Adam, I got a question for you.
Yes, sir.
Would you rather drop Delino DeShields or Jason Wirth?
In our categories league?
Yeah.
OBP?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. I guess the Shields. Do we ever win steals? We have some steals.
Yeah, we had some steals.
With Polanco and Desmond.
Yeah.
Did you see Jeff Samardzija gave Michael Morse a concussion?
Yes.
We're picking up Skoglund.
Okay. Yeah. Cool. I like that.
Yeah, yeah. Heath isn't here to stop us.
So Dustin Pedroia is on the DL with a wrist injury. He might only miss 10 days. There's no structural damage. We'll see. Vince Velasquez has a right elbow flexor strain, and Velasquez is on the DL.
Yep.
See about
that. His velocity fell a lot in the middle of that start, I believe.
And we've got Cameron Maben was out with pain in his side. Tyson Ross could be ready next week. Anybody buy this? Giancarlo Stanton, 12 for 29 with three homers as the number two hitter in the order. Anybody buy that batting second would be better for Giancarlo?
I mean, there's the theory now that batting second is where you put your best hitter. So I don't know that it helps Stanton necessarily, but I understand why the Marlins are doing it. And by the way, Stan's having a pretty awesome year, like a 45 homer, 120 RBI
he's
pace.
Cut his strikeout rate and his walk rate, so he's being more aggressive, which is a trend that we've seen over the last couple of years. But now he's doing the sort of Joey Votto thing where he's swinging more at pitches inside of the zone, swinging a little less at pitches outside of the zone.
That's Giancarlo Stanton. The Phillies have discussed sending Michael Franco to the minors, according to Jim Salisbury of CSN Philly. I own Franco in 3 of 5 leagues. Am I crazy for still owning him?
He's there. There's this like weird sub-tier of third baseman that we all really liked to varying degrees coming into the season who have all just been kind of trash. Bregman, Franco, I guess Beltre, but he's been hurt.
Longoria, Frazier.
That just like, I don't know how low to move them in my rankings. I've got Franco 17th, but that's just more like, I hope.
Who's the most droppable in that group? Frazier is the one that stood out when you said the names. We're talking Bregman.
I'd be more likely to drop Frazier. I mean, yeah.
Franco?
Franco than Frazier because of track record. I mean,
I'd be more likely
Franco's
to
had a good half season.
Start. Yeah, it's true. And I guess I'm just thinking about, like, because Franco, for me, he's not even a third baseman. He's just a utility. Right? You know, he's a bench player.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't need him to play third necessarily. So these are guys that have a lot of upside.
Why not Bregman versus Franco?
Like you say, Franco's only had a half good season. Had a half of a half good season.
Right.
Home
but there's
run,
been
two
a lot
of great games for Bregman.
Yeah, it's a weird. It's Franco's in like that perfect place where he's had long enough. He's disappointed us long enough that we feel like we should know better when he disappoints us again. But there's also been that short period of time. Like, it's almost like it's been too long for Franco for me to keep buying into him. Well, Bregman,
sure.
It's been just a couple months this season. It could just be a slow start.
Okay, why don't you rank these four players, just rest of season. Justin Bour.
Okay.
Yonder Alonso. Alex Bregman. Justin Smoke.
I'm still going to take Bregman 1, but then I'll go Alonso, Bour, Smoke. Man, I can't believe I'm putting Bour 3rd in that group.
Alonso's been so good.
Yeah.
Slugging like 6 something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Does occasion. He still might sit against lefties, but which is why I'm surprised you went with him. But they're all lefties, all three first basemen.
I don't.
Smoke's
at least
a switch
before
hitter.
The injury, he had stopped sitting against lefties Alonso had. Let me double check.
I looked this
morning.
That. It was a little inconclusive.
Yeah. It was
right,
pretty
so
recent.
Would you put Bregman ahead of all three of those first basemen, Chris?
That's a tough one just because like, the argument for it is that it's harder to find a third baseman, but none of these guys are starting at their primary position for you anyway, most likely. They're either your utility or corner infielder anyway. So at that point, you're just comparing all of them. And yeah, I think I'd rather have... I guess I'll go Alonso, Bour, Bregman, Smoke.
Alonzo, Bour, Bregman, Smoke.
Heath's not here, so it doesn't feel quite as good, but I did write about Justin Smoke yesterday. I actually think it's really interesting. You should go read it.
Okay. all right, and a couple more notes real quick here. The Giants called up Orlando Calixte, who has a pretty good Game of Thrones team name, last name.
Yeah.
At AAA, he batted 838 OPS. Didn't hit 838. 838 OPS with 11 steals. That was in the PCL. So Calixte led off for the Giants and played all three outfield positions yesterday, but he's shortstop eligible. So, who's interested in Orlando Calixte?
This isn't the first time we've seen him in the majors, for what it's worth. He got three at-bats for the Royals in 2015.
Oh, I remember them well.
No, and that's kind of the point. Like, he's a non-prospect who's with his second organization now, and just feels like a journeyman to me.
Okay. A little bit of speed there, I guess. But, so that's Orlando Calixte. We're not so interested. Finally, Robert Gsellman could end up closing.
I told you he was a sleeper.
For the Mets. For the Mets.
See, the weird thing about that is he's been god-awful in the first inning.
Mm. So, they like his sinker. I don't know. We'll see. I don't see any reason to take Addison Reed out of that role. But.
Addison Reed hasn't been good.
He's turning around. Got a couple good ones in a row.
But he hasn't been good this season. Gsellman could play up in a smaller role, but nothing we've seen so far really should make you very confident in that.
Well, if you want to go to a Mets game or you want to watch Eric Skoglund pitch for the Vikings even and go to a baseball/football game, you should use SeatGeek. I have the SeatGeek app on my phone. I think we all have the SeatGeek app on our phones. I use it every single time I need tickets. With just a few taps, I can instantly find seats. We're talking sports. We're talking comedy, theater, concerts, anything you want to go see. Use SeatGeek because it saves you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites. We also have a promo code for you, Fantasy. When you use the SeatGeek app, use the promo code Fantasy. You will get $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. And this is a great part about SeatGeek as well. Every purchase is fully guaranteed. You can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. So you get out your phone, you open the app, you look for an event. SeatGeek searches multiple sites, finds the best deals, and lets you know very easily by grading all the seats. This is the best bang for your buck. This is the ticket you want to buy. Get to the game, get to the concert, use SeatGeek. And again, download the app and enter the promo code FANTASY. That's promo code FANTASY for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. That's an outstanding offer. Download the SeatGeek app and use the promo code FANTASY. All right, time for the legit-o-meter. 0 to 10, how legit are these guys? We can also frame this in a buy low, buy high sort of way. Brett Gardner, 80% owned. Two homers yesterday. He is the number 16 outfielder in points leagues, number 14 in Roto. Gardner slumped earlier in the year, but really you could sort of attribute it to a collision he had at first base. He was bad after that, and it's been pretty hot since.
I don't think he's stolen a base since.
He's not stealing. He's still got five steals, but 11 home runs.
I was going to say earlier, you know it's a record-setting month for home runs in MLB when Brett Gardner's hit nine.
Yeah.
He's
one of these guys, and we saw, a lot of these last year. Because I just remember doing the research and how many times I wrote in my notes preseason. A lot more fly balls, and the home run to fly ball ratio was way up.
Yeah.
I can't remember off the top of my head who it was, but there were so many of them. And Brett Gardner right now fits that description.
Not necessarily something you would expect. You would actually, just from a math perspective, you would expect the more fly balls you hit, the more the number will normalize, move towards the mean. And so I would expect he'll probably go back to about 11 home runs per fly, 11% home run to fly ball rate, which is half of what he's been this season. But I guess Yankee Stadium can boost that a little bit. He is hitting the ball a little harder, but
he's hot.
It doesn't feel legit to me.
I'd be fine just enjoying it. Like it's worth trying to sell high. It's going to be very difficult to do in the outfield. Maybe you target the Mike Trout owner or something.
All right, listen. You're the Mike Trout owner.
I am.
Podcast Points League people, you want Brett Gardner? Come and see me. So legitimate or what, like a five? He's not bad, but
no,
he's not.
Yeah, but like he's hit nine in May. I would expect him to hit nine the rest of the season.
Okay.
Which would probably, I'm pretty sure that would be a career high for him.
Yes, 17 is his career high home runs, and he's got 11 right now. So Zach Cozart is next on the legit-o-meter. Then it'll be Elvis Andrews. Then it'll be Chris Owings.
That's so weird.
Cozart is 88% owned. He's the number two shortstop in both points and Roto. He is batting .350 with seven home runs, two steals and two attempts, a great walk to strikeout ratio, 26 walks, 32 Ks, 13 doubles, four triples. And I looked at the batted ball profile. It looks very similar to last year, but the BABIP is at .394.
Yeah.
So Zach Cozart, legit-o-meter, 0 to 10.
I'll go, if we went 5 on Gardner, I'll go 6 on Cozart. I still think, just from the BABIP, it's clear he's performing well over his head. That doesn't mean he can't flirt with a 300 batting average. You know, doesn't it kind of goes without saying he's not going to hit 350. But I like the strikeout to walk ratio. I like that there's a little bit of power there.
There is some pop there.
Mainly, I like that he's a shortstop. I think that makes him very difficult to even try to sell high on because, like, what are you going to do with shortstop after you trade him?
I think he's a very low-end starting shortstop, but, like, I would still expect him to hit around 250, 260.
Are you taking Addison Russell or Cozart rest
with with as little as he strikes out, you think it'll be that low?
Yeah, he's... There's no real reason to think that he's changed this dramatically, and he's always been a really low BABIP guy. And so, like, 282 for his career, he's at 294 now. So I would expect even when that normalizes, he didn't strike out much last year. He had the same strikeout rate, and he had a 252 average. So
yeah, but there was it was a really bad BABIP last year. Like, if we're,
it was
if
his
we're
highest
just...
in 3 years.
Okay.
Like, he's a low BABIP hitter. Zach Cozart.
Zach Cozart we're talking about. Cozart or Russell?
I would still take Addison Russell.
Me too. It's
but
close.
I think they're I'm close in my rankings at this point.
Yeah, like when I was going through shortstop yesterday, I was really torn on where to rank Cozart, and I could be talked into moving him ahead of Russell probably.
Elvis Andrews is the number three shortstop in points leagues, number one in Roto. He has 12 steals. He had stolen 24, 25, and 27 bases in each of his last 3 years, over his last 3 years. So he's going to blow that away at this pace. He's on like a 36 steal pace. Seven home runs. His career high is 8 hit last year. And 13 walks, 34 strikeouts. That probably looks fairly normal for him. So Elvis Andrews, it's just he's killing it right now. Legitometer on Andrews, 0 to 10. Chris?
Yeah, the change started happening last season.
Come on, hit me with
extent.
A number. Hit me with a number.
5.
Thank you. And yes, he did have a great... Didn't he have a big second half last year, Andrews?
Yeah, I think he started hitting for power in the second half last year.
And that's a game changer. If he's, you know, going to have a profile similar to what we saw from like Jose Ramirez or even Francisco Lindor last year, that's what would make him a legitimate stud and not the de facto stud he was for most of his career because shortstop's so terrible.
Like, well, what do you think? You think it's legit?
It's kind of the same thing I'm saying with Cozart. Like, I almost don't even care. I'm just willing to start him at shortstop and enjoy it for as long as it lasts.
I really hate to cop out, but aren't there some things where it's just like, I'm going to ask you guys what you think, and who knows?
Well, that's right? Most of it.
Yeah. It's like, so some things we have a pretty good idea about.
We're taking educated guesses on most of this stuff. There's a lot more uncertainty involved in what we're doing than the way we talk about it. Yeah. Typically.
But this is a guy who's never hit more than 8 home runs, Elvis Andrews, in a season. He has 7 right now.
Yeah.
But you think about how far we've come in terms of player evaluation, you know, and the transformation by way of advanced stats of that process. I mean, we've been podcasting 7 years or so, Adam.
7 or
and
8,
like,
yeah.
The discussions we have about these players, just how dramatically they've changed during that time.
Well, for me, it's like every year I add a new website. Like, 1 year it was Baseball Reference. Then it was Brooks Baseball. This year I've been on Fangraphs a little bit more. So,
yeah. Well, and things like fly ball rate. Even BABIP was completely foreign when we first started. So we have a lot more information.
And the whole world.
We sound a lot smarter when we talk about it. I don't know that we're any more accurate.
The whole baseball world's understanding of all of these things has changed, too. Like, you know, BABIP used to be something that we were just like, it's just luck. And now we're like, no. Certain players are just going to be high BABIP guys. Certain players are going to be low BABIP guys. With Elvis Andrews, it is worth noting, Scott, you've talked about this a lot this season, stealing bases is, you know, what, 75% intent?
Okay.
He is on pace for about 15 more stolen base attempts than he had last season in the same number of opportunities.
Okay.
He had 219 stolen base opportunities last season, attempted 32. At his current pace, if he had 219 stolen base opportunities, he would attempt 46 steals.
Like, I'm looking at your rankings. Are you going to move Elvis Andrews ahead of Jonathan Villar?
No.
I That was another one. I really had trouble with that about 8 through 14 range at shortstop, where you have like the Owings and
all
Cozart
the bad players
and Andrews and VR. Like players who some of them have performed really well for one third of a season, mm-hmm. and some of them performed really well last year and haven't performed so well for one third of a season, like Aledmys Diaz being another. And just when are you willing to make that leap and put the Johnny come lately?
But Aledmys Diaz is a good example of why even a full season may not be enough to tell us about a player's skill set.
So are you pulling the plug on Aledmys Diaz?
No, I still have him, I think, a little bit ahead of these guys. But I'm certainly less confident.
But Elvis Andrews was a top 10 shortstop last year, too.
Right.
So, I mean,
de facto.
Like, you got to put it. I feel like he should be ahead of Tulowitzki, Chris, and he's not. At least in points, he's not.
In Roto, he is.
All right. All right, last shortstop here. Chris Owings, number 7 in points, number 3 in Roto right now. Chris Owings, batting .315 with 6 home runs, 9 steals in 11 attempts. He has had a big May with a .322 batting average, but a .397 BABIP. This one feels the least sustainable to me. Would you guys agree between Cozart, Andrews, and Owings that Owings is the least sustainable?
He was on our radar the earliest of these three, which I...
The other two have been kind of slow burners, except Cozart was like the best hitter in baseball for the first 3 weeks of the season or something crazy.
Right, yeah. But it seemed like all batting average. But now lately it seems like Owings has been all batting average, right? What? How many home runs does he have
in May? In May he's batted .322 with 2 home runs and yeah. somehow only 8 runs scored.
I'll give him a 4. I know I have him ranked ahead of Cozart. I probably need to change it.
Yeah, right. 3. I've had a lot of trouble with him in general. Just like, I'm not sure whether I should buy into him when you guys have.
Okay, that's Chris Owings. So not quite as legit as the other two. I'll tell you what is legit, though. Fantasy baseball is legit. It's awesome. And so is Draft. Play Fantasy on Draft, a simple daily fantasy app where you can do snake drafts just like the ones you do at the beginning of the season all year long. On Draft, it's draft day every single day. Do drafts whenever you want. People have been challenging me. Big Kane 2. I will tell you, I was on vacation over the weekend, and I've been pretty busy as I'm home with my family. So I'm heading back to New York soon, so I'll be able to have a little bit more time to challenge you guys and beat you in drafts. But look, Draft is great because your chances of winning money on Draft are almost 3 times better than your chances of winning on FanDuel or DraftKings. You can do a 2-person draft, a 10-person draft. They're snake drafts. They're so fun. They take really no time at all, just a few minutes to complete. You're only, for the most part, you're starting 2 starting pitchers and 3 hitters. I recommend prioritizing pitchers. They seem to make the biggest impact, and hitters are a little unpredictable. So download Draft now, and this offer we have for you is great. The promo code is FB today. FB today. When you download, you will get a 100% bonus on up to $600 when you deposit. So download Draft in the App Store. It's going to be the first one that comes up if you type in Draft. And use our promo code FB today for that 100% bonus on up to $600. Back to baseball. Legitometer on Cody Bellinger, who went 0-for-6 with 4 strikeouts yesterday. And in the 8 games prior, he batted .179 with 3 walks and 14 strikeouts. Only 2 extra base hits. They were both homers. Those 2 home runs kind of saved Bellinger a little bit. So let me frame it as, like, Bellinger has been a serious impact player since being called up. How legit is that, 0 to 10?
Strikeout rate's up to 32%.
Give me a number. Hit me with a number.
I'll say
he, as an impact player, like, big time.
Has been or is,
four. Is going to be? 4. That's low on Bellinger.
I tried to sell high on him before this uptick in strikeouts happened in the podcast league and didn't get anywhere. I wish I had, because I agree. I'll give it a 5.
I still think he's probably a starting caliber player, but not as a first baseman.
Mm-hmm. You know, more as like a utility player.
Utility, low-end outfielder.
Is it?
Yeah, he's maybe 40th in my outfield rankings, so we're talking kind of a fringe starter in 3 outfield.
Yeah, like
leagues.
In the league where I have Mike Trout in, I feel okay about my outfield regardless, because I picked up Conforto, because I picked Bellinger, because I picked up Eric Thames.
There's been so many strikeouts lately, man. Oh,
yeah.
It's crazy.
It's been bad. It's
That's why I don't dock guys the way I used to. Like, look, I feel like Bellinger, look, pitchers are adjusting to him right now. Let's see if he can make the adjustment back.
And there's
but at
no guarantee
he hit those two home runs.
There's no guarantee he can.
And I only own Bellinger in a roto league, which makes it easier. I don't lose points for strikeouts.
He will continue to hit home runs. I don't want to bury him either. Like, he's probably going to be the NL Rookie of the Year, right? Am I forgetting somebody obvious? I feel pretty confident saying that already. But at the same time, you probably, at the height of Bellinger hysteria, it would have been a good time to trade him.
All righty.
But it's probably a good time to trade anyone at the height of hysteria. Right now is probably still a good time to trade Aaron Judge. Like, there's still sliding scales of
that.
These things.
Like, I legitimately think Aaron Judge is a top 10 outfielder, and I understand he's probably not going to sustain this batting average, probably not going to sustain this OPS, but when the dust settles, I still
think... Right, but you're still...
What kind of upgrade are you going to get from that?
But his perceived value is probably still higher than his current value.
Not if he's a top 10 outfielder. I mean, would you trade him for Ryan Braun?
No.
No, but Ryan Braun's hurt.
Would you trade him for Stanton?
Yes.
I have Stanton one spot ahead of Judge.
History?
So, yes.
Okay.
But I think he's basically Stanton 2.0.
Would you trade him for Price? Would you trade Aaron Judge for David Price?
No.
Depends on need. I might have a lot
risky.
Of outfield depth.
And David Price is too risky.
All right. Legit-o-meter on Robbie Ray, who just threw a complete game shutout with 10 strikeouts at Pittsburgh. In his last three starts, no runs in 23 and two-thirds, only three walks. But they've all been on the road. At San Diego, at Milwaukee, at Pittsburgh, at home, Robbie Ray has a 6.75 ERA. So, first legit-o-meter, that he's the number 12 starting pitcher right now. So, what do you think on Robbie Ray? Forget the legit-o-meter. Let's do buy low, sell high.
This is just so interesting.
Do you
with
keep
Robbie
him,
Ray,
or do you try to sell him because the last three starts have been on the road?
I need pitching so bad, unless I can trade him for a better pitcher, which we always say are the kind of deals that don't actually happen. I'm not going to trade.
You'd have to trade him for Price. I don't care about the you'd have to, right?
But the interesting thing about Robbie Ray and the way he's pitching this year is he's introduced this curveball that I think Zach Greinke Robbie Ray's talked about how Zach Greinke's helped him develop this curveball. And curveball is usually not a great swing and miss pitch. What you're looking for with the curveball is a lot of ground balls. You're hoping guys will get on top of it with that downward movement. His ground ball rate has gone down. So it's it's kind of hard to, it's just, he's such a difficult pitcher to figure out. It's so hard to figure out.
Well, but I think my main point here with Ray is that 0.64 ERA on the road, 6.75 at home. Last three starts, 23 and two-thirds scoreless innings. All on the road against two bad lineups and Milwaukee. It was obviously a big start for him. San Diego, Milwaukee, Pittsburgh. So do you look at that and say, when he pitches at home, he's going to stink again? Or are we waiting for the humidor?
I own Ray in a couple leagues. I've never sat him. You know, home or away.
Would you trade him for Jose Quintana?
Not right now, no.
Yeah, I don't think I would either. They're kind of parallel each other in my rankings. They're right next to each other.
Would you like to know a reason to be really skeptical of Robbie Ray?
Mm-hmm.
He has a 42.9% hard hit rate, which is the highest in baseball. Now, I'm skeptical of how much pitchers have control over hard hit rates, although he's always been a very high hard hit rate guy. He's an impossible, before the season when I wrote, my series on guys who could be aces, he was one of the ones I wrote about, and I tried to find, what could this guy do to get there? And with Robbie Ray, it's just I don't know, pitch better? that's just
kind of... I mean, he has pitched better. You look at his numbers, I think at least Heath and I had him as a breakout pitcher this year, and you look at his numbers, and it seems like, okay, this is exactly what we hoped Robbie Ray would be.
A lot of his peripherals are identical. His fly ball, if I told you that someone's strikeout rate went up a little bit, but his walk rate and his ground ball rate moved in the wrong direction, he's just a weird pitcher.
Well, I think what's encouraging
is it's hard
is
to draw
three
one
walks,
conclusion.
Three walks in his last three starts.
Yeah.
I don't
and zero in his last two.
That's going to take a while for me to buy into that he's stopped walking people.
Right.
But
He's pitching better right now.
You can live with the home runs, you can live with the bad home park if he's not walking guys.
Yeah.
If that
strikeouts
changes,
are so elite.
Yeah. It's a game changer.
But that's Robbie Ray. Who's more
redundant.
Legit, Robbie Ray or Luis Severino?
Severino.
I would say Severino.
Okay, another really good start for Severino yesterday with eight strikeouts in Baltimore. And he gave up one run on three hits in an inning and a walk. All three of them were infield hits. Pathetic infield singles to shortstop. So frustrating. So, like, in theory, this could have been four hits and no runs instead of seven hits.
What about Robbie Ray or Michael Pineda?
I'd take Ray.
Me too.
Would you?
He's been the Pineda doubter.
They are mirror images of one another.
They're pretty similar, except Pineda doesn't walk anybody.
Yeah, and he gets more ground balls, but he also tends to get hit even harder.
All right, is this the start of something big? Alex Bregman with a home run in two straight games. And actually, look at May now. The numbers look a lot better after the two games. 272, 306 on base. Ugh.
That's weird.
511 slugging. I didn't, like, he never walks, huh? 15 walks and 201 at-bats last year for Bregman.
I feel like he walked a decent amount in the minors.
His plate discipline, and it may have been mostly strikeouts, but he was a guy who walked more than he struck out in the minors. It was really, really good plate discipline, which was part of the reason I've been so enthusiastic about him from the beginning.
Is this the start of something, or just too not enough yet?
Yeah, I still think it's just a couple of good games.
Okay. How about 28 days of Chase Utley hitting .349? With a .432 on base and .635 slugging percentage, 7 walks, 10 strikeouts, 2 steals for a 3% owned second baseman, Chase Utley, killing it over the last month. Is this the start of something, or is this just a good month?
Well,
he probably should be owned more than 3%. Like, yeah, that probably means there are like a decent number of NL-only leagues where he's not owned, which seems silly.
I mean, at the same time, he's only playing because both Turner and Peterson are on the DL. So he's not a long-term solution.
Okay. And is this the start of something for Albert Pujols? A 6-game hitting streak with 3 home runs, a home run in 2 straight games. He's at 599 for his career. And this is really encouraging because you look at the peripherals. Albert Pujols has the worst strikeout-to-walk ratio of his career, but it's really turned around. 6 walks, 22 strikeouts in April, 8 walks, 11 strikeouts, and an .838 OPS in May for Pujols. So the plate discipline's back. So he's been a little streaky the last few years.
We didn't talk about it much, but he was also coming off that plantar fascia surgery. That could explain the slow start in April. I still view him as a very low-end starting first baseman. I think I have Boer and Alonso ahead of him.
But not Smoke. I'm the only one with Smoke ahead.
Yeah, I don't have Smoke ahead.
All right, so Pujols is...
Smoke just has the longer track record of not being as good.
All right, so he's in that mix. And is this the start of something for Jackie Bradley? 2 home runs in his last 4 games. He only had 3 hits in his previous 6 games. So he had, but he homered yesterday. Everybody homered yesterday for the Red Sox, even Bogarts. Bradley's 82% owned. I wouldn't mind
way too low.
Picking him up if he should be, obviously shallow leagues. But
he should be universally owned.
I started Bradley. It was just like, come on, I think there might be something here. Yeah. So far, so good.
He's going to get hot at some point, but this, you know, his 82 versus Bregman's 86% ownership, I would rather own Bregman if I was given that choice.
Oh, I'd definitely rather own Bradley. I need more outfield spots, too.
You need more outfielders?
I need more outfield spots to fill, and I think he's a better hitter.
You need, what does that mean? You need...
Like, you have 5 outfield more. Spots plus an infield.
So you have too many outfielders.
No. I'm saying you just have more outfield spots to fill, so I'm more likely to draft a guy or add a guy.
But if you've been playing the waiver wire, like there are some 5 outfielder leagues where I can honestly say I need outfield help, but the 3 outfielder leagues, which I imagine are the only leagues at 82%.
Yeah, I feel the same way about corner infield, though.
Okay. All right, just real quick on this, more streaking outfielders. Melky Cabrera had 3 more hits. Jorge Bonifacio went 2-for-3 with a double and a strikeout. Steven Souza, ride it while it's hot. He homered yesterday. Last 6 games before that, he batted .478 with 3 home runs, so that's now 4 home runs in his last 7 games. And Hunter Renfroe doubled against the Cubs. These are all players we talked about yesterday. Matt Holliday went double dong. Devin Marrero, Red Sox third baseman, who's going to platoon with Sandoval, he went double dong. And rotation stuff here. Sonny Gray, ew. 9 hits and 7 runs, and all fell apart for him in the 5th. He only had 5 swinging strikes.
Such a letdown. Him and Tyler Anderson, man.
Yeah, it's bad.
Bummer dudes.
The Indians are good, so let's not bury him too much. It's a tough matchup.
I feel like last week was the prime time to sell on Sonny Gray.
We did it, boy.
We did. For another dud.
I forgot we had done it.
Jeff Samardzija.
And I thought, man, our ERA and WHIP's already messed up again.
We did it before that start.
But here's the thing about Gray. His previous two starts, each of them, had a higher swinging strike total than any start he had last year. So I still think he is trending the right direction, like Chris was saying.
Yeah, I don't know that I'm not saying he's bad. He's 93% owned. I'm not dropping Sonny Gray.
Yeah, he should be universally owned still.
Jay Happ came back through four innings. So let's wait a little while.
Velocity was a lot better for Happ.
Oh, it was? Okay, that's good. He was on the DL with an elbow injury. Justin Verlander, I wish I had seen more. I watched him throw three or four innings. It's just like, I don't know. I guess he got a little bit better as the game went on. But Verlander got hit kind of hard. He had a couple of really loud outs. Mm. He only struck out five Royals. So that's now 14 strikeouts in his last 19 and two-thirds over three starts.
13 swinging strikes last night, though, and 116 pitches. So the rate's not quite as good as it looks. But his velocity really is up this year. It's weird.
I mean, he was throwing about 95 in the first two innings.
Averaged,
he usually gets faster.
He averaged 95.7 last night.
All right, so Verlander's still, like, we're cool with him.
Top 10 starting pitcher.
Samardzija struggled against the Nationals.
Did he struggle with singles? Because that's kind of what the line makes it look like. Nine hits.
One home run, maybe?
I don't think he allowed a home run. Let me pull it up. The game log hadn't updated yet.
I think you're right. I think he gave up three home runs in his last start.
Yeah, but I mean,
he's had a lot of tough
the
matchups.
Fact he had more than a strikeout per inning again and zero walks again, like
I love
really
this podcast.
Like
a guy can give up
only six swinging strikes, though.
A guy can give up three runs and nine hits in four innings, but no walks,
well, also,
five strikeouts.
He allowed one of those.
More than a strikeout per inning doesn't really apply when you give up nine hits.
I know
four
you say
innings.
That, but I
well,
still
that's,
like
it's
it.
True.
I still like
he's
to
facing
see it.
Twice as many batters as you would normally expect, or something.
But
like
he
that.
Could have had two strikeouts and then.
Sure, five
right.
is better than
all
two.
All right, let's do rankings. Samardzija, Gonzalez. Samardzija, Sonny Gray, Gio Gonzalez. Rank them.
Samardzija, Gray, Gonzalez.
Yes.
Gio Gonzalez, to me, is...
He's fine.
If you haven't already, like, please sell Gio Gonzalez.
It might be too late to sell.
He's got a 3.03 ERA, and he's 4-1.
His WHIP is horrendous.
I don't even know if people look at WHIP. They look at ERA.
They should look at WHIP.
They should.
Especially when it's walk-inspired like his is.
He's got 35 walks and 68 and a 30. He walks three batters every start now, Gio Gonzalez. Other rotation members, Michael Wacha, Kenta Maeda, Jose Berríos, they all struggled yesterday. Although I think Maeda really was just the first inning, and then he looked pretty good after that from what I saw. Berríos struggled against Houston, and Ivan Nova had a very Ivan Nova start. Honestly, like, the thing with Nova in the points leagues is, does he get a win or a loss? It's like, because you know you're getting innings, no strikeouts. The only way he's going to give you a ton of points is if he gets a win. He's not going to do it through strikeouts.
But
he doesn't get blown up either. So.
Right, he's not giving you those Tyler Anderson starts.
He got 292 ERA.
And by the way, Jose Berríos, it was encouraging that in a game where he didn't have the command, in a game where his command was much like it was last year, he didn't get blown out either.
Right.
Paul Molitor actually said he was proud of him because of that.
What do you think about Wacha, guys? He had gotten worse every season as a starting pitcher, but still was pretty good for 3 years, and then was terrible last year. And now all of a sudden, Waka's got a 3.99 ERA, but it's all because of the last two starts, which are both against the Dodgers, who are one of the hottest teams in baseball. So what do you think about Michael Wacha right now?
I think he's a mid-3s ERA guy.
Okay, I'll take that.
Yeah, I think he's definitely worth owning. In this pitching landscape, especially.
All right, news and notes. Pablo Sandoval off the DL. Matt Andrés left with a groin injury, I believe. Miguel Sano had an illness. Joe Musgrove's on the DL. He might miss only one start. David Paulino will start today. Anyone care? David Paulino?
He's a prospect who was great last year in the minors, but I don't think he was so good, has been so good this year.
And
so,
I'm waiting for... Francis Martes has to turn it around in the minors, but he feels like the guy I'm waiting for in Houston still.
Not rushing to pick up Polina, but keeping an eye on him.
Francisco Liriano should be back Friday against the Yankees. Any interest?
Not in starting him, but I'll definitely... Yeah, I've got him stashed in a couple places.
I presented you with DeShields and Worth because I didn't want to drop Liriano. Yeah. I want to see how that Friday start goes now that we have him in that 16-team league.
Didi Gregorius was hit by a pitch on the hand. X-rays were negative. Jacoby Ellsbury making progress from his concussion and his neck injury. I'm not sure if I mentioned the Adam Jones thing, but he has a sore hip and has missed four straight games. Taijuan Walker should start on Sunday. Whit Merrifield has a 15-game hitting streak. Does anybody care?
I care because he's less than 10% owned, or at least he was yesterday, and that should probably be more... I mean, on the one hand, I'd rather own Jed Lowry, and I know he's less than 50% owned, but Whit Merrifield needs to be more owned than he is, just to ride the hot hand.
Mike Napoli sat for the second straight game with back stiffness. Ben Zobrist is having trouble hitting from the right side because of a wrist injury, but it's improving, so you might want to sit Zobrist in daily leagues if he's facing a lefty. And Adam Frazier has sat two straight games, and he's in a slump right now.
I'd rather be starting Merrifield than Frazier right now. Because
wow.
I don't think Frazier's upside is, like, he's hollow batting average guy.
All right, let's grade some trades from Paul. Give up Michael Wacha, get Steven Matz.
I think that's a B minus. Like, I just said I like Wacha, but ultimately he's probably somewhat replaceable. But Matz, if he hits his upside, could be very good. He could be a top 20 pitcher.
Yeah, I can go with that.
This is from Matthew, 10-team points league. Give up McCullers and Manaea. McCullers and Manaea. Get Kluber and Nova. McCullers and Manaea for Kluber and Nova.
I know Kluber's the one coming off the DL stint, but I think just for... I still think he's significantly safer than McCullers over the course of a full season. So a good chance to make this swap. I'll give it a B.
I was thinking B plus, and actually we were talking about McCullers in the office yesterday and whether we think there's the chance for an innings limit. We haven't really discussed it, but there's probably a chance.
I don't.
He only threw like 89 last season. His career high is 157. He's never thrown more than 104 before that.
I could see it being a situation where in the second half they bring in a sixth starter to skip starts here and there. But I mean, the Astros are going to the playoffs, right?
But if you're talking about
shut down McCullers,
no. But I'm saying if you're talking about a head-to-head points league, Kluber should have a pretty big advantage rest of season.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Okay, Steve in Long Island. I was offered Jose Quintana and Odubel Herrera in a 14-team head-to-head points league. Get Quintana and Odubel. Give up Kenta Maeda and Peraza. Give up Maeda and Peraza, get Quintana and Odubel Herrera.
We don't get to look at these. You don't have them in the notes anymore, right? So I just got to go off.
Give this what the listeners are doing. Give up Maeda and Peraza, get Quintana and Odubel Herrera.
They can zone out, though.
Yeah, I think that's a C. I
feel like the best player is on the second side of that deal, right? The pitcher? Who is it, Maeda?
Quintana.
Quintana. Yes, yes. Quintana is clearly the best player in that deal, so I give it a B plus.
And finally, this is from Isaac, 12-team head-to-head league. Give up David Price, get Matt Carpenter. He currently has Starlin Castro and Devin Travis playing second base. Carpenter would be an upgrade. So David Price for Carpenter.
And Carpenter would be a very, very big upgrade.
Well, not so far.
So far.
Castro's been better.
Oh, Castro's probably been better, but we know that's not real.
No.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's definitely an upgrade. I think Price is too much to give up. You've waited all season for a pitcher who would be something in the neighborhood of reliable or at least have a chance of that. I think with the way Price's velocity was spiking first start back, I feel pretty confident in him right now, and I wouldn't want to sell him.
Ryan,
I think it's a good trade.
Ryan traded Corey Dickerson for Tanaka. Ryan Blicker. Do you think that's a good trade? Give up Dickerson for Tanaka?
Yes.
C to C plus.
James wants to know if we should all pick up new Tigers pitching prospect Donald Covfefe. I don't know. Covfefe.
Did you miss this?
Is this a joke?
Yes.
What is it?
You'll hear about it.
What is it?
No comment.
Did I just say something that I have to bleep?
Not bleep, no. Just usually not territory we tread on.
What is this? You don't know, Scott, do you?
I don't. I'm not as plugged into the internet memes as Chris is.
Oh! Oh, come on. No, I got... Oh.
You got to cut it out.
I might have to cut that out.
Cut it out.
No, I'm not going to cut it out. I'm just going to say that I truly had no idea what
it's,
I was quoting.
Look, it's nothing.
It's nothing. It's really nothing.
Was it worse than what I said?
It's
whatever
just
I
a
said?
Everyone makes typos.
It was a typo. It was a typo. So thank you for that question. I didn't screen the email before I read it. And have a great day, everybody. Go watch Along Came Polly.